is edging closer. A couple of metres out. Desperate defence by the men in green.
You've got to give Tupou another crack at it.
He gives it to Tupou. They drive him. He's about a half a metre short.
Release it now!
And Genia. Out to Foley. Dummies. Can't find a way through. Genia. Genia. Who wants it? Pocock!
And doesn't he deserve that? David Pocock.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
Just call it.
When Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
Hello and welcome to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. I hope you all enjoyed the last 16 months when Ireland were all conquering Grand Slam champions and gunning for the All Blacks' number one spot. But yeah, Saturday's Brisbane Suncorp Stadium, bit of a wake-up call. Ireland were good, the Wallabies were better, and David Pocock was. He was good.
Very good.
Yeah. To discuss the week's action, I'm joined in studio by Sports Joe's very own Pat McCarry.
Morning, how are you?
And he in the good company of Kev McLaughlin.
Morning.
And James Downey.
Morning.
Morning, lads. A little later, we'll be joined on the line by rugby writer with the Sydney Morning Herald, Georgina Robinson. But first, Ireland are human after all. It all comes to a stop. What did you think of that performance?
Disappointing. I think to start with, it was a really good test match. I actually thought the game was pretty enjoyable, pretty open. Both teams are going for it. I think Australia probably wanted a little bit more, was the impression I had. It's tough, like travelling, getting that out of your system. Brisbane's probably the hardest test as well. It's pretty hard conditions there. It's hot, it's humid, it's sticky. The type of conditions that none of the Irish lads would have played in a long time. And I think you could tell they just didn't have the normal zip to their game. They looked fatigued, I thought, and made mistakes, uncharacteristic mistakes at times. And I think I actually still expect them to win the series. I think they're going to win in Melbourne and win in Sydney. I think Joe's been quite smart. I think some of the guys needed a bit of mental refreshment, physical refreshment, whatever it might be, particularly some of the Leinster lads, and a lot of guys to bring back in now. I think Pat's picked a team for this weekend. He's got 12 changes, so he'll be sending that through to Joe later.
Including management.
12 changes. So Joe does have the ability to freshen up a lot, which is promising in that. Like, Ireland easily could have won that game with what was, you know, probably 10 second choice players, really, or 8 or 9 anyway, that, you know, wouldn't have started at the end of the Six Nations there, which is great. It's a good chance to test some of those guys out. Some of them went well, some of them struggled a little bit, but, you know, good test for the guys. And I know Joe he's got this balance now of really wanting to win a test series down there versus, like, let's see how these guys go and test some of our talent out before the World Cup.
He even mentioned that afterwards. He's like, oh, we need to, we've got to go on and win this now, you know. It's like we're 1-0 down. But I do think that it's interesting that he has this ability now to, like, we had these finishers, sort of say, coming on, and we were 9-8 up when we made a lot of those changes. So for Kevin there talking about, like, we've, like, some second choice guys, to actually put up a decent front, and I was quite disappointed in how the bench kind of impacted. I know, if I'm being kind of critical, like, Sexton had a bad miss to touch. Critical of Carberry on one thing. I thought he was very good. Thought he did a lot of things extremely well. One blemish is miss kick. That'd be it for me, really. Just back row, I think we're kind of a little bit overshadowed by the Aussies, but you've got to kind of look at a Cheka and how he does things. Like, Kev would have played under Cheka, and I think he would have been smart in his shooting how he went about preparing them for this game, like saying, like, look at this team we're playing against who've come down here and conquering all before them, and, like, you know, we're at home, let's put it up to them. Like, the defence and the line speed, Nathan Gray must be delighted with how they performed.
Those first 15 minutes or so were violent.
The Aussies were fired up.
Completely. But, like,
it targeted actually Carberry a lot as well, didn't they?
But Carberry, I think, has to get used to that. Yeah, like, true. He's an international 10. If you think it's going to be different if Johnny was in there, players target Johnny as well. I think it's this is something that he just has to put to the back of his mind and expect that this is going to happen on a week-to-week basis. But the line speed they brought, what concerned me was that we just didn't really, like, we love that kind of out-the-back play where we have a front runner and we go out the back. And I thought we should have, I know the commentators mentioned at halftime that, on Sky anyway, that we should have hit the front runner, the forward runner, and just to straighten it up a little bit, because we were going out the back. And to be fair to the Aussies defensively, they were making the right reads, and they were, conversely as well, I think a couple of times Bundy Akie had a couple of chances to move it and he didn't. And I know Murray Kinsler did a kind of bit of a piece on the lead up to one of the tries, and it was quite good that, you know, like, we're a bit hesitant in what we're doing. And he had a great gif of Johnny Sexton ahead of the line with his hands in the air going, like, why aren't we giving this? We should be in behind, you know. And just these are the small percentages. And I just thought that I do think we're going to win it. I still think, I know I predicted 3-0, but I think it's going to be, I do now, I'm going to 2-1. But I just think that can the Aussies keep repeating that? And we have, I think with Gary Ringrose back in, he'll add a new dimension. I think I'd like to see Joey play again, maybe not the second, but I'd like to see him go again. Didn't think he was bad. So, but look, all in all, you still have all these Leinster boys to come back in, and I think they can have a nice impact.
The big banter I kind of got was the Aussies kept talking about second in the world. Even you see some of the newspaper headlines was Australia beat second in the world Ireland. So it's something that they're gunning for, that they can overtake Ireland as well and prove that they're the next best there as well. And as you said, Cheka would have kind of really had them fired up. Like, and yeah, you could just say, I think Conor Murray got smashed 3 times in the first 10 minutes, like, and none of them were illegal or anything like that, but they really went after them. And then the Carberry one where Hooper absolutely destroyed him, but that was Jack McGrath passed the ball over his head, like a terrible pass. But Carberry did well to kind of keep focus, keep his mind on the job, get the ball away, because he knew he was going to get it, like, and he did. So Jesus, yeah, they had, it's interesting to see. It was almost like, I know Argentina came not last November and we went after their 9 and 10, that they went after a 9 and 10, and no one's really got after Murray like the Australians did in that first 10 minutes.
But I don't think Carberry seemed rattled. No. I think that he did fine. Apart from that missed kick, and we know kicking isn't the reason you're picking Joey Carberry, but he did fine.
He stayed pretty composed. Yeah. I think, just going back to what Pat was saying there, is Cheka is unbelievable at when you're kind of up against it, and you know the big dogs are coming into town and get a team fired up. He used to do it with Leinster when Munster were the big dogs in Ireland. Every time you play Munster, like, you'd have people unbelievably fired up, and you just saw that in the first 10-20 minutes.
How would he do that?
He'd be putting up every poster of how great, all the great articles written about Ireland, any quotes that any player that he ever made, that he would say, you know, these guys back themselves, they think they're better than they are, they're coming to our town, like really create this hometown mentality and be like, we don't lose to these guys at home.
So I wonder, can you do that for 2 tests and then 3 tests?
Yeah, well, that's what he's planning. That's what he's planning. It's harder, like the low diminishing marginal returns and all that. Yeah. I think it does fade off. I think when we were playing Munster, we wouldn't play them then again another 4 or 5 months, so you'd be able to get fired up again. It's really hard for a 3-test series, but that's exactly what he's going to be trying. But I think Ireland are going to be more wise to it this time. But yeah, like, Carberry dealt well with it. I thought I would have loved to see him play the 80, like, see if he can close out a test match. They were 9-8 up when Johnny came on. Historically, Johnny's not great off the bench. He's better when he's controlling the game right from the start, and it's his game plan, he's owning it. Sometimes he maybe forces things a little bit when he comes on. Like, he's world class, probably best 10 in the world at the moment, but best from the start, and a great test for Carby. Can he close out a test match? 9-8 up, let's see how he goes. You know, but there's going to be a good few changes. I think the likes of Levy, Johnny, I think Ringrose, you were saying as well, like, 3 players that make a massive difference now.
Okay, let's talk about the centre. It's like, we'll talk about Pocock and the back rows a little later on. Yeah. So you mentioned Bundy Akie. Right now, what I see is Bundy Akie and Robbie Henshaw, two really, really fantastic players. But perhaps we don't get as much out of that centre partnership as we could do.
I think, I'd agree with you. I think you're looking at, when you have centres like that, not so much bludgeoning, but they're physical centres, and I think it was kind of matched up then against the two Aussie guys, and we need someone maybe just a little get out. Like, I think if Joey had Gary Ringrose, he has that mentality with him of he knows he can put him on an outside and Gary can have that opportunity to have an outside break and stretch the Aussies just a little bit, because I think we had them in positions where we should have put them away and exploited some frailties out wide. But I just think that they're too similar. I know it's worked at Connacht for them, and it was great at the start when Bundy was starting that he had his partner from Connacht when they played together there, that it was just a bit of a seamless kind of integration for him. But I prefer someone with a bit more kick, kind of, you know. I think that Robbie now has kind of been moulded more into a 12, so I'd like to see Robbie push back in and kind of get that Leinster trio.
On the old, on the Aussie side, Curtly Beale was fantastic.
Unbelievable, wasn't he?
He caused a lot of problems. So how do Ireland plan to neutralise Curtly Beale?
It's hard. He's an absolute live wire. And as much as anything, it's those passes.
He
fired out about three or four passes that just put people in space and absolutely zipped them out. And he's one of those players that always has a ball in two hands, and he'll either fire a pass out, he'll put footwork on, he'll burn someone on the outside. He was absolutely electric.
It's hard to kind of, like, the simplest thing to do to take him out of the game is either make him tackle or just put him under pressure that he's just physically exhausted. And towards the end of the game, he was actually took a bit of a knock. So it's like, this is the whole thing about the three test series. How can they do it week after week after week at such an intense level? And do Australia have that strength and depth? I know Cheka has blooded a lot and knew more players, but do they have that strength and depth now to last three tests? Because it's very traditional, like, and you know, and your body.
I don't think they do.
Well, this is,
you look,
like,
at their lineout was terrible. I think, say, if someone like Foley gets a knock, they're in serious trouble.
Yeah.
They got to the point where they couldn't kick to the corner. They got tapped and goed, which was brave in the 22 at the end. But they couldn't kick to the corner because your man kept overthrowing the line out. Like,
yeah. Just seemed like, sorry, I'm positive there as well. Rob Herring, I thought, threw very well in the line out.
No, he was good. That was like, that was solid for Ireland. But I was just going to say, Jimmy, with, especially because it led to that Foley try. With Henshaw, you see, like, he burst out of the line twice and missed his tackles as well. Is that him making that decision himself, or is that, was that a tactical thing?
You can see it, like I was kind of shouting, if he hits and sticks him, it's perfect. But if you don't stick it, I know Earls, he likes to do it as well, runs out of the line. And if you hit him and you get man and ball and you stick him, it's the right option. If you don't and they make a break, it's like, what are you, after?
Yeah.
Like, you've taken it of your own accord to make a little break. I'm sure they've been given a license to, if you make a read, go for it. And sometimes if you have a centre, a 13, say, who's going to shoot up, the 12 can sometimes slide across and cover just in case they do make a mistake. But he'll be disappointed himself about slipping off that. That was a soft one, to be honest, you know.
Yeah.
And like, if he hits him, he nails him behind the gain line and the Aussies are in trouble. But conversely,
it's
we were
Australia were targeting Ireland on the wide channels.
Yeah.
And I think they would have looked at a couple of games in the Six Nations, said Ireland are frail there. I think Wales exposed us there a few times.
Yep.
And when you got guys like Beale and Foley that can
they can get there.
They can get there, and they can fly on the wide channels. They got like Corvetti, like really dangerous players. I think we missed Ringrose. I think he is the best defending 13 in the Irish squad right now, and I think he'll make a difference there.
And he's got that much speed to recover as well. But I think for like for when we got called out, then we had like Keane Healy, all the front row,
like steamrolled,
like absolutely hanging out there. And but that's smart to kind of target that. But yeah, I do think that an area of concern would be that we do concede a lot of yards out wide, and quite easily, to be honest. I think we're very narrow around the ruck in how we defend, and we just need to space it out a bit more. I know we spoke about it after the Wales game, but yeah, I do think that Ringrose, to have that communicator and that speed and that nous defensively, will give players around him more confidence as well.
The standard TMO call, firstly, TMO call I thought was right. Do we have any disagreements?
It was a bad decision though.
Because
it should, the question should have been, any reason I can't award it? Like, he had momentum, got over the line. Like, I just think they got a favour, the attacking team there.
That's what I think what Joe Schmidt said, was it?
Yeah.
I disagree. So I disagree because the referee and the touch judge talked to each other and neither of them could see the grounding.
Doesn't matter though. I just think you got to give the benefit of the doubt in those scenarios. Like, based on the reaction, the referee's got to have a bit of cop on there and be like, he looks like he scored that. Like,
do you think? I think he's made a bit of a wrong option. I think he should have passed.
At what point?
He kind of went himself and pulled across, and there was a support player on his inside.
This is Herring.
Yeah, and he could have put it in.
Herring would have countered under the post, would he?
I don't know, but he dragged that extra defender.
Herring is quick, yes.
Yeah. Bundy was there as well, but then I think Beale stepped across him as well, so Bundy then was just that split second behind as well. But it's funny because you watch it, and I've smacked the microphone there. Get so excited about it. You watch it from one angle, and it looked like he's clear, but then I think it was Haylett Petty was coming over, so he had to step to his left.
I think he thought he was clear too.
Yeah.
Haylett Petty did a good job.
He did a really good job.
I think he actually scored it though. I think he's rolled over.
I know the bit
you're talking about is it's after the tackle's actually made. Haylett Petty's underneath.
He
shifts the ball down and I think I agree with you, right?
Yeah.
I think that in a perfect world where we had a microchipped perfect ball, right, that ball is on the is down. But there's no way I can give it.
Do you hear Andy coming in there with the microchip ball? He has to get a bit of tech in. Trademark Andy McGee.
Someday in 5-10 years there's gonna be a ball like that, I'm telling you.
There'll be going on technology.
It will be, exactly.
It'll be sensors.
It'll be twice the way because of the microchip, like Andy's microchip.
So now that we've got our whining out of the way about tries, we're not even gonna go into the one at the end of the match. Right.
Oh.
The magical camera.
That no one saw.
And now, from an Australian perspective, we're going to bring in Georgina Robinson. Hello.
Hello, guys. How are you?
We are very well.
Okay, just okay.
We're okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lick your wound sufficiently.
We've done some wound licking. We've done some complaining. But it's fair to say that Australia were not happy with one thing in that game, and that was the Folau try reversal. How did that go down?
Yeah, look, I think at the time everyone thought it was the roughest of rough calls, considering it was a fairway back before the try was scored. But, you know, it's a penalty, isn't it? So it's a penalty any day of the week. And I think on reflection, when they had a chance to consider the bigger picture, the fact that they'd, you know, won the opening test, and this is a team that, you know, just a notorious slow starters in test seasons in this June series. I think they thought, well, we might just take that on the chin and focus on the bigger picture, which I think is a smart approach. And Coleman himself, they put Adam Coleman up after the game. He himself said he sort of, you know, he was really trying to take the physicality as far as he could, and admitted he'd gone a bit too far. So I think that's probably the right way to handle it from the Wallabies' perspective.
Gents, what do you reckon? If that call went against Ireland, I think we'd be going nuts.
Nah, it was the right decision. Like,
you think?
Yeah, I'd be going nuts at Adam Coleman if I was. And you could see Cheka. I think they flashed him in the box a few times, and he was absolutely freaking out because it's just so stupid. Like, smashing a guy off the ball now with TMOs in the game, and not only that, he held him down the ground then for a few seconds. And
I agree, it's foul play, but it's Ireland play another four phases.
Yep.
Before Australia even get the ball.
Yep.
Right. And I'm not sure we should be going back unless he's actually done something really, really super naughty. And even then, I'm not sure I'd be pulling back the try. I'd be giving him a yellow card.
Yeah, it's more of a contentious decision if it's a closer game. And if they lose by a point or something, you're going to go, well, that's a huge part of the game. But I completely agree, it's a penalty every day. It's like, you've got to, if you're going to be that stupid, to have that kind of, to come out of line and hit him, and he's no way getting the ball, he's not even looking at where the ball is going, he's just running up to smash him. So it's silly and should be punished, because you don't want it to kind of kick on in and people getting away with this and going, oh well, it's back 10 phases, so that's fine, you can get away with that. So don't do it, don't be stupid.
Right, well, there's one thing we haven't... go on.
Well, I was just going to say that the stupidity of it was, and, you know, you're right to point out that Cheka was going a bit feral in the box at the time it happened, because they've been working really hard on just cleaning up the discipline a bit and tightening it up. You know, Ireland are just... the best in the world at being disciplined, and Australia have conceded so many penalties and yellow cards in the past few seasons under Checker. So this was a really big issue. So, you know, and that's the fine line. Now, I mean, I've never seen them so pumped up. I wrote that I'd never seen them so pumped up and so physical. And, I mean, Adam Coleman is from Tasmania and, you know, it just took it a little bit far.
We actually talked about that at the start of the show. That first open, you know, the first, what, 15 minutes or so from Australia, it was, I used the word violent. That's probably going a little far, but they were smashing Irish people.
Yeah, what a podcast for, but the going a little bit far. but it was. I honestly, I tell you why I knew it was a way I'd never seen them before was Kirtley Beale's tackle on, you guys can fill me in here, it was early in the game. And this is a bloke who is known for footwork, creativity, heads-up rugby. He's a solid defender, but he is not generally known for crunching tackles like the one he made pretty early on an Irish player. And right, there we go. And that's when I was like, okay, these guys have all drunk the Kool-Aid and it's really happening. And I think Australians really love that. They really love seeing a team like that. We're used to, you know, this emphasis on running rugby and attacking play, and that's really good. And we would hate it if we had a coach that was playing Jake White kind of rugby, kicking everything territory, or, you know, perhaps even Joe Schmidt rugby. But what they really want to see is also a team that's prepared to muscle up and put on some big but legal hits, and that's what they were doing.
Georgina Kev here. Just going back to that for a second, like the Australian public, how are the Wallabies perceived at the moment by the Australian public? Because I know they've had a really rough couple of years, really, and the tonking they took by England in the three test series last year would have hurt, I'd imagine, and there seems to be a lot of hurt, and that hurt seemed to be kind of displayed in a lot of physicality in the game of the weekend, which is great. But how much clawing back does Michael Cech and his Wallabies have to do to get back in a good perception from the public standpoint?
They've just got to play like that, and you know what, they don't actually have to win everything, but they have to play like that. It actually reminded me a lot of the Waratahs in 2014, which is the year they won the Super Rugby title. And the defence coach, Nathan Gray, who's now the defence coach of the Wallabies, said, we want to be brutal in defence, but we also want to be brutal on attack. And so basically it was just the whole of contact area view he took as defence coach, and said that we will hurt you when you have the ball, and we'll hurt you when we have the ball. And that's sort of what I saw last night in Brisbane. And more than that, I really think they really actually played with some kind of collective purpose, and that's what we haven't seen from the Wallabies in quite a long time. They look like they love each other, and they look like they die for each other. And I think that's what Australians really want to see, and that's what will earn them back respect, win or loss.
Yeah, and some of the key kind of bellwether players for them, like Pocock, Will Guinea, Folau, you know, Kirtley Beale, the guys that when they play well, the Wallabies play well, seem to be stepping up. Like Guinea, that's probably the best rugby he's played, best game I've seen him play in a long time. He was so sharp. Same with Kirtley Beale, Pocock, you know, back at his best. I think they're those leadership figures, having them playing at their best seems to make a huge difference, particularly for the younger guys coming into the team as well.
Exactly. I mean, can you imagine if you're Caleb Timu or Pete Samu in the Wallabies back row and you're playing next to Michael Hooper and David Pocock? You'd just be soaking it up. I can't imagine a better apprenticeship. That's definitely correct. And Kirtley Beale, I think, is the talisman of the team, and is also, they're also a real hard on sleeve kind of team, and which is much like their coach. You guys would know that. When he's angry, he can't hide it. When he's happy, he can't hide it. And Kirtley Beale can't either. So occasionally you'll also see him, you know, so watch maybe in Melbourne, you know, if Ireland put them under a lot of pressure, put him under a lot of pressure, shut down his time and space, and if it rattles him, you'll really see that on his face. And, you know, for better or worse, he really reflects what's going on in the team at any given moment on the field. And, you know, as a journalist, that's what makes him such a compelling player to cover and observe, but also makes him a really important player to the team. Pocock's entirely different. I mean, that bloke and Rugby Australia copped it for like the last 18 months for letting him have a sabbatical and letting him take a year out and travel and build huts in Zimbabwe and, you know, fulfill that side of his personality, fill his soul up a bit. And then because when he came back at the start of the Super Rugby season, he had to get some surgery on his knee, a bit of a sort of a clean out. And everyone was just filthy, saying how dare he sort of take a year off and then get surgery and be in rehab on Brumby's time, on Australian rugby time. But surely that performance last night is vindication of his choice and also Rugby Australia's decision to, you know, grant one of their best players some time away from the game after a decade of service.
Yeah, Kev, that was actually something I wanted to ask you, like kind of getting a little bit technical on it. Like 2009 in Crow Park, Pocock, a 21-year-old lad, came over and just caused chaos at the breakdown. So he's been a well-known quantity for around a decade now. But I think he got four clear turnovers in that game there as well, and he came close. I did a piece there for Sports Show, and I was saying, went in to poach 15 times and was involved in 56 rucks. Like, he was just on a, like, he was on a defensive detail. Like, he doesn't show up much in attack. Well, he got the bloody try, like, but he's a known quantity, so how can he still cause such chaos to teams?
It's pretty amazing, because, like, if he went in for 15 poaches, he also made 19 tackles, or 19 with 20 minutes to go or 15 minutes to go, probably more than that. It's pretty incredible. But, like, you know what? He's actually generally illegal. And I've done been looking back at his approach and the way he actually makes his poaches, is he has this ability to fall with the tackled player, attach to the tackled player, doesn't release, gets straight back up, and never really actually goes to the ground. He's such a low centre of gravity that huge upper body strength, latches on with his arms. So he uses his arms to kind of leverage him up, gets his hips up in the air, so it paints a really nice picture for the referee. And then he isn't always even going for the ball. Sometimes he's just blocking the ball in, so it looks like he's trying to get the ball, but he's just in a really nice position. And it's next to impossible to clean him out, because he falls with the tackle player and there's no release. It's very hard for the clean out. I thought the referee did well to ping him a couple of times, actually, when I think Alan Quinlan was saying it was legal on Sky Sports, but I didn't think it was legal because he fell. Technically, if you're part of the tackle, you have to release before you go on, and I don't think he does a lot of the time. But the way he does it, looks, he disguises it unbelievably well for the referee, and he's next to impossible to move once he latches on and gets those big arms on the ball.
One quick movement. Yeah, and it's in one sort of fluid movement. He sort of tackles, swoops, his legs are spread really wide. Yeah. You're right, his bum's up in the air. And you could actually see in a couple of rucks he was supporting his body weight with his hands. And you're right, and he does just make it look like poetry in a way, you know, which I never thought I'd say about a defensive breakdown, but he does.
Yeah, well, one of the writer over on this side of the world isn't quite as enamoured with it, right? We don't often do this, but I did think this comment is worth pointing out. So Neil Francis in the Sunday Independent said that, "I think David Pocock is a cancer on the game." It's certainly getting reaction here. I assume it's been picked up in Australia as well. I think it's great to watch.
I think that's ludicrous from Neil Francis, because it makes the breakdown way more interesting.
Yeah.
You've got this grey scrum cap hovering about every single ruck. It puts huge pressure on the attack, and that's what you want. You want to have to work hard to keep the ball. And I think it's great for Ireland now. They've got a massive target, and they're going to be putting one of the poor bench players in a grey scrum cap this week and kicking the absolute shite out of them. I guarantee you.
We got a question in from a listener on that, making that exact point. Who's the poor Egypt?
going to be given the grey scrum cap this week.
Tig Byrne, I would guess. The absolute perfect target.
But the
left to swap out his blue one and put on a grey one. Like
in the 46th minute of the game, I was watching the game back on with the Aussie commentary, because it's always good to get that different
Fox
perspective.
Lad, yeah.
And he said, I've been watching how much Ireland have been trying to hold Pocock on the ground, but he still manages to get up and get there. But that's what it's about. And I was reading Gordon Darcy in this morning's Irish Times. He did a nice line here, and he's talking about when he played against Tipperick and Warburton together. Said they came up with a simple plan. It always sounds simple, but they can't steal or even slow ball if they're stuck at the bottom of rucks. So you do what you can. You either hold them in or you run at them and make them make the tackle themselves. Easier said than done, but how do Ireland do that next week?
Who's refereeing this weekend?
I'll find out for you.
Because Joe is going to have a meeting with the referee, and the first thing he's going to say is Pocock needs to release after he makes the tackle before he gets on the ball. He's going to, like, it's going to be the number one thing Joe's going to ask the referee to look at. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is they're going to try and target him earlier.
And Cech is going to be making the opposite point with the referee, which is watch for the Irish players holding on to my boy.
But then you're forgetting about Hooper, who's there as well. So if you forget about one, there comes the other guy.
That's
so
a great point.
Do you know,
and Pete Samu, who actually did some pretty good work there too
on his debut. I think as well that like playing against players like that previously, when you have an Armitage or something, like we used to try and, as you say, make him tackle, or you try and take him out early just before the kind of ruck or someone's going down, and he just as he's waiting. Okay, it's hard with Pocock when he's involved.
Guide us through it. When you say take him out early, explain exactly what you mean.
Well, you see him and you've targeted him, and I'd kind of get up, just wouldn't even worry about the ball, about going anywhere near it. I'd just go straight for him and just try and clean him out.
The other technique you can use is you can latch the ball carrier a bit more. So that means you're actually going, you're latching onto the ball carrier, and as they go to the ground, you're sliding past and smashing beyond the tacklers. There's a couple of things they need to do.
You have to be careful about that you don't go to ground with them, and then you're killing it then. And then, so that's the kind of
pinged,
so it's the trade off there.
The ref is Paul Williams.
Okay. So, Georgina, any tips? How do we deal with Pocock?
Yeah, look, nothing. I've got nothing. And if I had anything, I would not be telling
exactly.
The
hard guard. I was actually thinking that I could see Toner coming in for this, because he's brilliant at clearing out beyond the ruck. He's just such a big unit, 6'10".
He doesn't look as obvious.
Yeah.
There's one big step by Dev where he's got a big arm out. It only looks like one step. It's actually about four.
He's the king of the latches, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
Incredible latches and bashes guys through contact.
And then I think the thing I'm looking forward to most, because I even heard actually they did a warm up before the game, and the only player that didn't feature in it was Dan Levy. So they're completely resting him up. Hopefully there's nothing kind of injury that he's carrying or anything like that, but throwing Dan Levy into the mix there against Hooper and Pocock, it'd be brilliant to watch.
Yeah, I know Schmidt is conscious that some guys have mileage. He's mentioned it about Byrne actually, that okay, he hasn't been playing for Ireland, but he's played almost every minute you can for Scarlets. Levy took a lot of beatings over those last few weeks as well. So maybe they've been rested up now, and I mean, Byrne might come in off the bench. That might be a nice introduction for him. But Levy and the team would be interesting.
Listen, can you guys answer a question from me? What do you make of Joe's persistence with his World Cup plan and his comments at the sort of very end of the press conference on Saturday night that you couldn't afford to change your plans to, you know, give a guy like Joey Carberry more game time and perhaps persist with starting him. Is that something the rugby appreciating public will cop?
Yeah.
You know, if that means losing a few games before the World Cup?
Yeah, it's something that we spoke about before. It was like, do Ireland want to keep winning, go out with the strongest team every week, or do you want to give a few lads a bit more game time? And yeah, I think that was Schmidt speaking after the game. He said he wanted to give lads this kind of white hot atmosphere of playing against a tier one side and
the
see
the furnace, how, you know, he said.
The furnace, And so it's I think everybody kind of knew over here in Ireland that they were going to test a few things out, but I think now that we're 1-0 down,
experimenting's finished.
Yeah, there's a lot of people back here saying F this.
And I think part of this Irish team's evolution is they have to be able to go down to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and win a test series.
Yeah.
And I think you look at what England won the World Cup, they went out to New Zealand, they beat New Zealand, I think they beat Australia as well, and that was part of their evolution, and then the following year they won the World Cup. I think that's the way Joe's going to be thinking now. This is a massive test. We've lost the first game. He's going to go all out for the game this weekend. Championship decider, really, because if they lose, they've lost the test series. So I think you'll see Ireland coming out all guns blazing, fully stacked this weekend.
So you're looking at what, Pat, I know you've forecasting many changes. Jerry Thornley's forecasting many changes, sort of 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, myself and Jerry saying I think it's going to be 9, 8 or 9, yeah. I'm seeing 2 in the back row, 3 in the front row, Sexton definitely back in, Ringrose, and then maybe Larmour or Conway on the wing for someone like Earls, but... it's so interesting to see. Yeah, Toner as well come in. So interesting to see if Tadhg Byrne gets dropped in, and does he get dropped in as blindside, or does he get dropped in the second row?
So he'd be on the bench.
Yeah. You reckon? Yeah,
yeah, I would imagine. Bench, yeah.
Any changes expected on the Aussie side, Georgina?
I'm not sure. Checker plays his cards pretty close to his chest. I don't think we have the depth that Ireland have. Not that the bench delivered much of a spark for Ireland Saturday, which is another issue, I guess, and talking point. But for instance, Bernard Foley at 10, Kirtley Beale, the starting 12, is Checker's backup number 10, and the bloke after Kirtley Beale is Reece Hodge. Okay. You know, who's essentially there as a bit of a utility. So there's not a lot of tweaking. I guess also, do you change a winning team? Think not?
No real reason,
There's no real reason. Maybe Pete Saamu might start instead of Caleb Timmu.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he has a lot to work with at hooker. You know, Brandon Paenga-Ramosa didn't have, it was his test debut. He, botched a lot of throws. They've said they're going to work on their set piece. So, maybe they can tweak something there. Look, Tom Robertson, the prop, came on and made a real impact.
Yeah.
But generally, I think that we'll see pretty much the same. Perhaps something at number 6. And apart from that, look, Marika Korobetti on the wing was, maybe didn't finish everything off, but definitely made an impact. And then Dane Haylett-Petty is really, I think, the perfect companion player to Israel Folau, because he is a solid tactical kicker. So he's good under the high ball, but where Izzy is still struggling to, get his tactical kicking up to the same level of every other aspect of his play, Dane Haylett-Petty, really covers him nicely there. So I can't see much happening in the back line. Coleman made an impact. Sometimes he made too much of an impact. I think maybe in the back row, just at number 6, perhaps. Perhaps you'd reward Pete Saamu for a lot of impact when he came on, but I don't think there'll be too many changes.
Okay, so we await team news. Georgina, while we have you, we want to touch on a piece yourself and Tom Decent had in the Sydney Morning Herald, and it's something that over here Gav Cominsky, Sinead Cassan, Jack O'Toole have written good pieces on, and it's the IRFU's decision to turn down a 3-test series for the Ireland women against the Australians.
Yes, very interesting story. Very interesting story. The backdrop is that the Wallaroos have underperformed here, and so Rugby Australia are desperate to get them some more test matches before they play the Black Ferns in Bledisloe Cup doubleheaders in August. And so threw out an invitation to the IRFU and were knocked back very politely. They said we were very interested, but we just, it's not our priority. We've sort of settled on some November fixtures to prepare for the Six Nations. So thanks, but no thanks. And actually, I'll tell you what the bigger strategic play is here. It's something that Rugby Australia, the IRFU now is where Rugby Australia was about 2 or 3 years ago, maybe as little as 2 years ago. Everyone thought, women's 15s rugby was dire death when women's 7s rugby really came onto the scene with the 7s World Series and Olympic inclusion. And that was certainly policy in Australia. And from what I've read, it sounds like policy in Ireland. And it just didn't happen here. There were players in the sevens team, and then there were just club players who just wouldn't go down without a fight. And they actually latched on to a really passionate advocate for women's rugby in all its forms, a woman called Josephine Sukkar, who's now the president of Australian Women's Rugby. And she held Rugby Australia to ransom. She said, unless you give the women's 15s game an equivalent competition, domestic competition, to what we call here the National Rugby Championship, we're pulling our sponsorship. She and her husband founded a construction company that funds a lot of club rugby and sort of domestic tier rugby, and they did. They stayed true to their word and pulled their sponsorship of the national. They were naming rights sponsors of our domestic rugby competition, so men's 15 aside, and pulled it. And lo and behold, 8 months later, Rugby Australia came up with this Super W concept, which is a domestic women's 15-a-side competition with teams aligned to the Super competition, to the Super Rugby teams. And a couple of months into that, Build Corp, Josephine Sukkar's company, came back on board. And I know the narrative in Ireland, and the belief in Ireland is that the people in charge at the IRFU are expecting women's 15 aside to, you know, just stroll off into the sunset without a fuss. And it appears to me that the reaction from the story means that probably isn't going to happen. I don't know what your take on it is, but that's, I think, the strategic piece, because these codes are really battling to fund, you know, all of the different formats, and thought that if they put all their money and effort behind sevens, given its Olympic inclusion and probably here anyway access to government money, that was the right move to make, and they just didn't account for a bunch of women who wouldn't cop it.
And on the funding piece, I just want to make the point that what's being reported is that Josephine Sukkar had offered to pay the accommodation costs for the Ireland squad in Australia, but that they would expect then the IRFU.
Yep, she had.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had. She said, if you can fly them over here, we'll cover everything else, basically. And she'd enlisted the help of the Lansdowne Club over here, and the president of the Lansdowne Club, whose name escapes me, I'm sorry, said, whatever you need, we'll mobilise the network and look after these women and get it done over here. But a three-test series around Australia, that's a lot of money. It'd be a couple of $100,000 at the very least, even, you know, on airfares and things. So it just came down to money. That was certainly the behind the scenes message. It wasn't the quote from the IRFU, but it was certainly the reason that the women didn't come out.
Yeah, well, I know actually, Georgina, that some of the Irish women's players were just pissed off there before the Women's World Cup, that the likes of Canada, New Zealand, England were all playing these three test series, and Ireland got to play Japan a couple of times, maybe Spain as well, and it was just, they were saying, we're preparing for World Cup and we're not getting proper preparation at all. Like, so I can't ever see a women's away tour going away to somewhere like Australia. Like, they're just not going to put the money in. The focus is on sevens. I don't think they're ever going to officially come out and, you know, put that on the record, but sevens is where they're putting all the attention in. You're even seeing women's players getting pulled from the Six Nations to play sevens competitions as well. So, you know, that's a clear kind of raising of the flag where all their support is going behind. But the great thing that's going to happen since then over in Ireland is that you actually have, in the past it was just kind of former players giving out about it, but you're actually having current players coming out and actually saying this is a disgrace as well. So that's good to see that they're mobilised as well, and hopefully, I don't know, can they meet in the middle, Dubai for Australia and Ireland tonight?
In 40 degrees.
Yeah.
Well, actually, a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a really interesting issue for sports, and the reason it's really interesting is that, for instance, over here, if over here, there is no major sporting code in Australia, AFL, rugby league, rugby union, football or soccer, cricket, that does not recognise that to grow their revenue, to grow their market share, they need to go after girls, young girls, and they need girls as well as boys now playing their sport. I don't know what's happening in Ireland, but that's the scene here, right? And the AFL started doing that about 12 years ago. So 12 years ago, they went hard in school for 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds. 12 years later, what's happening? The girls they've gone hard at now expect to have an elite competition to play. So now these sporting codes are coming up to the reality that if you go after them, you can't then say, okay, you're 18, thanks very much, now go back to just watching it on the TV and how about you just watch the blokes. they've created the market and now they have to give them elite competitions to play in. And the AFL here 2 years ago started the AFLW, the AFL Women's Competition. So, and that was a result of 12 years ago going after girls. So if Ireland, you know, I know that there would have been a lot of talk about participation around the Women's World Cup last year. If Ireland are going after women or girls playing to play the sport, they will have to give them competitions. And obviously not every girl is going to want to play sevens.
Okay. That's a really interesting perspective, Georgina. Thank you very much for talking us through it. We're going to let you go. We'll continue our usual blathering in the studio for the rest of it.
Well, thanks, gents.
Cheers, and Georgina.
Look, if it comes up roses for Ireland in Melbourne, I'm not available on Monday.
We'll talk to you again. Thank you very much, Georgina Robinson from
See
the Sydney
later.
Morning Herald.
Bye-bye.
Right, that's enough talk about last week. We're going to come back with your social media questions.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember Rod Kev in the Killiney, he used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards, which doesn't include Kev now, because he's gone.
Yeah, another half day for Kev.
Another half
fair
day.
Play to him.
Yeah,
looking for a full day's pay too. But
apparently so.
Jimmy, look at you saying something. Just consummate professional here. It's just great.
That new producer we have now is unbelievable.
We're going to look at some of the questions you've sent in on social media. Remember to follow us on Twitter at @thyrugby and use the hashtag #AskThy if you want to get in a question for next week. Okay, first one. End of season and jet lag seem to have flattened Irish rugby. How do we counter this for the 2019 World Cup? Should we travel to Japan 3 or 4 weeks earlier and have a few friendlies to sharpen up? That's from Jonathan Coleman.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be something in place beforehand. It happened. Okay, we don't want to talk about the Battle of Bayonne, but they were over. They went over early. You go over, you acclimatise nice and early, because ultimately it's the be all and end all, isn't it? It's the World Cup that we're striving for at the moment. I know we mentioned earlier on the show about winning the series. Yeah, Joe needs to win it, but his remit is World Cup, and they will be there nice and early.
Yeah, I'd say they'll play maybe 2 test matches at home. You know, they might do something abroad again. It'll probably all be against the Six Nations sides again, and then yeah, it would be interesting to see. Like, I'm sure they've lined this up, or it's already been discussed 100%. Already. But it'd be interesting to see if they did have a test match over in Japan or something like that. Take on the Sun Goliaths or something like that in a friendly game.
There'll be something over there, because you're not going to leave anything to chance. And if you do, it'll be like look through the fine tooth comb to find out where things went wrong, and that'll be. And you don't want a Saipan, you don't want any of that, you know, you just want it to be, everything will have been done. RFU are very good at that, and it would have been done a year or two ago anyway.
They gave them like a very easy week by the looks of it, you know, like they were off water skiing or jet skiing and golfing and stuff like that, but they did look to be flagged like in that last 20 minutes, like, and the Australians sensed it. But the thing I kind of noticed, and I was kind of saying there before, was at the end of that first half, like normally Ireland, they've made it like their, you know, it's one of their go-to things. They'll try and score points in injury time or out of time. And Ireland had a scrum near halfway, and Conor Murray just kicked it out. 41 minutes gone. Like, and to me, that was a real sign of like, you know, this, the guys don't have the same energy. Like, you know, like they, why don't they press, have a couple of phases, and if it goes wrong, so like, yeah, it was just that, it was that kind of thing that are these lads flagging, and then it looked like that in the final 15-20 minutes. So hopefully they're a bit more acclimatised. They have another week. I'm sure they're going to go easy on them again in training this week, apart from maybe Tadhg Byrne getting the crap kicked out of him in training.
Okay, next question from Rob Ryan. The tackle on Remy Grosso, illegal or unfortunate? If the latter, a ban for recklessness, given it's the head and the importance of trying to avoid that. Yeah, this was a big double hit. The New Zealand Herald said that Sam Kane or Ofa Tungafasi would not be cited. We've seen no citing yet.
No.
As usual, if once we say that, it'll happen just after we record. I don't know how it's not a citing, given what the punishments have been in place for the last 18 months now. If you go in like that and you hit the head, if not for Kane, certainly for Tungafasi.
Yeah, I would have gone with the latter there, Tungafasi. To be honest, it's extremely hard when you're in that position and when you see how low the two of them are, but you're leading with a shoulder and a shoulder to a head. So
a now double fractured head.
Yeah. And it's not great. You kind of have to take the double fracture out as much as you... As you don't want to, like, you kind of want to say, look at what he's done. Even if he hadn't done anything, you need to...
That's a fair point. We don't do outcome-based. It's
exactly.
Not healthy.
It's like, regardless of... Even if he was fine, got up and wasn't even sparked or anything, you'd be like, right, that's a shot to the head. And I know it's low. I know he's falling. And it's a tough one, but this is where we've spoken before about these things on our on individual basis, I think. And as like we spoke, Andy, before, and it's like when you slow it down and you see these slow motions, it doesn't look great real time. I think it's hard, but no, you gotta try and cut it out as much and have it in players' mindset.
Yeah, this won't look good if it goes past and nothing is said. So what I'd suggest is this is one of those times where if they don't do anything, someone needs to make a statement from on high saying why they're not.
Or else just deal with it and move on and go, right, this is the ban. There you go.
So yeah. Yeah, I would. Hansen will go nuts. He's already been fairly clear that he says, look, there was nothing intentional, therefore no crime. But sorry, that's not how the law and the punishment works. Yeah.
And the French then just compounded because they got a very soft yellow card against them when it was 11-all.
That was Luke Pearce dropped the ball.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
He went straight for the pocket and he didn't need to.
Didn't ask to see it again or anything like that. And
even the Kiwi commentators were like, nah, what are you doing?
Yeah. It was just so you could just see what the French would be so livid about the whole thing, and then only maybe 5 minutes later, this their man gets absolutely cleaved out of it, and that
would not make you happy.
No,
no, but it's still not going to account for the scoreline either. But that's, I watched the first half and I was like, just fair play to the French, kind of hang in. I was like, not a chance they're going to hang in. Like, but in the back of my mind, the Kiwis are so good at just. Not panicking, just finishing teams off, and you think the French might go, oh look, it's a tight game, but my god, they're good, aren't they?
Yeah. Damien McKenzie is some man to bring off the bench, isn't he?
Not bad. The bench, look. Yeah.
Speaking of turnarounds, England 21 points, leading by 21 at Test 11, losing is, there are no words to describe how extraordinary that is. It's unreal.
It was a very, what was it, point a minute, interesting opening 15-20 minutes of 24-3, and England just seemed to, like, I thought Ford controlled it and some of his passing was sublime, finding holes. There was holes everywhere. I think they had targeted the two new wingers, the Test debut guys, who seemed to be a little bit in no man's land defensively, and England were just running riot, and whatever was said and the words said, but once they got a bit of composure, got a bit of just a bit of time on ball, really, I think they caused them so many problems. Like, not just their not your normal physicality that you would expect, not like, as someone mentioned earlier, a Jake White team. It was a Razzy Erasmus sort of team, and it's quite interesting for the South Africans, actually, because it's a very new squad, very new team, and they look dangerous in attack. A lot rather than your usual, oh, here's Vermeulen going to run over, and everyone's just going to be one-out runners running over. They look lively, and England were going to scratch their heads, and South Africa totally deserved it.
Yeah, yourself and Kev, before he went into studio, were raving about Faf de Klerk.
Oh, like everything he did.
Yeah,
just tempo. Like, he's kind of very ratty. He's very kind of, you know, he just tries to increase the tempo, which again goes against what you would normally associate with a big physical South African team. And he, even what's his name, the second row, Pat, you're a good man for names,
but Simon, was it?
No, was it? Anyway, he was making his debut, the blonde guy, and he was unbelievable. Erasmus, was it Erasmus?
No, or? I thought it was, is that not RJ Simon, was he?
Andre Snyman.
Simon, that's how the pronunciation was all over the shop there.
Yeah, there you go, there, yeah. Completely true.
So we'll edit all that down.
Andre Snyman, I nailed it, yeah. Do edit that. But he was immense, like, and it was like his debut and his, the amount of carries he got through and tackles, and it's a very much...
Eddie Jones has been put on the fryer now by a few people.
It's concerning. Like, it
he
is.
He says he's only lost four because you don't count the Babas.
Well, look,
I'll give him that.
If he's going to deflect that, fair enough. But that's, if he's going to talk about you've lost four, you've lost five, and people aren't talking about how their players are performing, he'll be happy with that.
Yeah.
Like, if you go in, if you go, right, why isn't this guy doing this? Why? Like, I didn't, at the start, I was like, this forward, Farrell access is opening teams up.
Yeah.
But then, flip, you're going to go defensively, is it working? There's a Henry Slade at 13. Don't know. I thought Elliot Daly was very good at the in the back. I thought they negated Vunipola a bit then, and kind of when they kind of lose a certain amount of players, they kind of go quiet. You know, I thought Sam Curry was okay as well. They've a good squad, so it'll be interesting to see how they can bounce back from this and how much of a shot in the arm it's going to give the Safa. So it'll be an interesting second test.
There's actually Simon Gleave there. He was saying he was going to check if it was the biggest ever turnaround in like a tier one game, and it turns out that it is, and it beats Ireland
19.
Giving up 19 points against the All Blacks in 2013. So that's a record I'm happy to lose.
I thought that there was another biggie. Did Wales lose a huge one?
I think he ended up, because he was talking about it immediately after, said he thought it was, and then he went back on Simon on Sunday and said, yeah, to him he confirmed it. So he's a good man to trust.
I would trust Mr. Glees he's going to look for it. Very last question. Kyle Johnson wants to know, does Saturday show a lack of depth at 15? Poor performance from Carberry with no talk of any competition to him now that Carberry's set for 10. Would Henshaw at 15 be an option given the quality and depth of our centres? It was a weird performance from Carney, actually. He started the first half hour, he was a Superman.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal. Smooth silk. And then it all changed in that 10 minutes before half time.
Yeah, I think he misjudged a kick, or he got a... And then he was just a little bit out of sorts. Look, you can't take away from what a great year he's had. You're allowed to have a little bit of a bad day. As for putting Henshaw 15...
Joe has mentioned that before.
Because physically Robbie's changed. I don't think he, not to say his light, but he's bulked up a bit to play in the centre.
He was a lovely running fullback when he came in first.
But that's what he was. He was a fullback. And then he was a 13, and now he's been kind of pushed into a 12. So, but you look at the physical shape of Robbie. Robbie's bulked up. He's put on an extra at least 5 kilos, if not more.
But the question, if we're viewing Carberry as our 10, right, and not our starting 15, then are we looking at Conway? Zeebo's out of the picture.
Yeah. Larimer as well.
Yeah.
Slide Stockdale across.
You'd be pretty... if you're doing that, you'd be pretty pissed off if you're an out-and-out fullback. And Kearney's not playing well, and he'll go, right, hang on a second here. We'll just... A little bit of a stopgap will push him over and put... I'm the fullback here, why am I playing? Like, if Conway's going to be fullback and he says, right, Zeebo's gone from Munster, I want 15 as my position, put me in. Like, okay. They'll have had the conversations, so I'm sure it's going to be a question. Maybe does Rob need a break of fullback? Give him a break this time? I don't know.
Well, Kearney was doing some media yesterday or last night, and he was saying it was just a concentration issue. He went through 6 or 7 minutes where the intensity was off the charts, and it was just a moment where concentration slipped. I was looking at this yesterday, went back over that sequence, and from about the 32nd to the 34th minute, Kearney is involved, bang, 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 including some fairly heavy contacts. Now, he definitely is very slow getting up after the last one, and that's immediately before the kick he allows bounce.
Yeah.
But then later on, he dropped one completely. So he definitely was off, But it was a shame. He was looking fantastic before that, so
The interesting one I kind of found was, like, just from myself working over the weekend and doing articles and stuff, is the two players that everybody turns on, and maybe it's they go back to them again, like they always get hammered if they lose, but Peter O'Mahony and Rob Kearney both have been getting a lot of flack since that game. And I thought O'Mahony had a great first half. I thought he was really good in the first half. Didn't see much of him in the second half. But and then again, like I would say, if there's a team they should pick, I would keep Kearney in there because he's had such a good year in the lead up to this. So, like, just because Israel Folau looked absolutely phenomenal doesn't mean that Kearney, you know, was too horrible. You know, those two costly mistakes in the first half. But I'd keep him in there for the next game anyway.
Okay.
Happy with that?
I'd change and bring him back to our test.
Okay, yeah. So would you go Carberry then, or?
No, I'd change it up. Maybe just.
So you're Conway. Putting Conway in there.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Second test, yeah.
Because we know what Rob does. Nothing against his performance. Like, I think, as you say, it was just a small lapse and that's it. I don't think there's any, I wouldn't, as you say, okay, I know people go after that. It's like the kind of Mike Brown of England. But like, no, you like, he's perfect. I'm happy with what he's done.
It is so unusual for him to make mistakes like that. We'll give him that one. All right. Listen, make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for next week. So, thanks to Pat, Kev, Jimmy and Georgina. Shane Dempsey was on sound and Fiona Delaney is on video detail. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.